Well, President Barack Obama delivered his annual State of the Union address last night, in which he outlined plans to push for new restrictions on guns. He called for a boost in the minimum wage and to accelerate troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. It was, of course, an important speech coming at the beginning of his second term. If you can react to the speech, you have opinions on how well the president did last night. What did he include? What did he leave out? 816-235-2888. Our email address is up to date at KCUR.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. I want to bring Congressman Emanuel Cleaver into our conversation. He's a Democrat from Kansas City. Let's go to Bob Beatty. He's a Washburn University political scientist. And Bob, nice to have you. Good morning.
Hi, good to be with you, Steve.
Well, this was his first State of the Union address, Bob, of his second term. So how big a deal was this speech?
Well, the State of the Union is always a big deal, and it's very interesting context, because it reminded me of President Bill Clinton's years, because during Clinton's years we had the O.J. Simpson chase and all that was going on, and of course you have these other things going on while President Obama is going to speak in California, but also
yes.
many of the issues are similar. Bill Clinton dealt with immigration issues. He dealt with gun control. He dealt, the echo of Barack Obama saying, well, we don't want to be a big government, but a smart government. And of course, Clinton said, some similar things. And so I think it was an important speech in that sense that this is his second term, and second term presidents, they understand the history that they can get bogged down, but they also really want to get something done.
What did he emphasize that made sense to you last night, Bob? What did he leave out? What did he shortchange that might have surprised you a little bit? What's your sense?
Well, first of all, the tone. It's fun to watch the television programs and see the pundits. And most of the pundits thought he was going to go after the Republicans, like some thought he did in his inaugural speech, and really sort of tweak them quite a bit, and the tone was quite a bit different. Somebody counted that it was almost 10 times that he sort of gave shout-outs to Republicans and even Mitt Romney, which was sort of fun, because then the camera went to Paul Ryan, who I think wasn't expecting that in the audience. But so the tone was really one of, hey, let's get some things done, and I'm willing to compromise. So in terms of specific issues, I think clearly the immigration issue. And he didn't just say we need to do something about illegal immigration. He said, here's the different parts of this comprehensive bill. It would be let's address illegal immigration. Let's address border security. Let's address legal immigration. Let's, maybe we can attract scientists or doctors or dentists or whoever we need. And to me, that's saying, here's something for everybody. Here's all the things that we can put on the table. We can come up with a compromise, both parties. And so I would hope after hearing that people interested in this issue wouldn't just say, oh, I didn't like that he wants a pathway to citizenship, but instead said, well, I do like this idea of border security, so there's grounds for compromise.
What are his odds of passing comprehensive immigration reform as things stand right now, Bob Beatty?
Well, let me put it this way. I think his odds of doing that are better than some of the other issues he mentioned, and that might have been strategic. Mention a lot of different issues that you want to get accomplished, thinking that, well, you can get one done and, use almost that as bargaining chips. He mentioned the minimum wage. He mentioned gun control, and he's got immigration reform. Maybe all of this is a way to get immigration reform done, which would be huge. Mm-hmm. I think the odds are the best for immigration reform, because the Republican Party is, also has political considerations. We saw who the response was from in Spanish, Senator Marco Rubio. Mm-hmm. Even the Tea Party response by Senator Rand Paul mentioned, hey, we need to really work on, the idea of immigrants and immigration reform. Rand Paul mentioned that. I think there's a really good chance of this being the signature piece of legislation coming out of Congress in the next year.
We're wondering, and we're talking about the president's State of the Union address last night, his big speech, the first speech of his second term. We're wondering what the highlight of the speech was for you. 34,000 soldiers coming home from Afghanistan. He talked about funding for preschool, raising the federal minimum wage to $9 an hour, reducing nuclear weapons, all proposed by President Obama in last night's speech. What struck a chord with you and what was missing? 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You can also email us up-to-date at kcur.org. I want to bring Congressman Emanuel Cleaver into our conversation. He's a Democrat from Missouri. Congressman, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Yes, good to be with you.
I wanted to begin, Congressman, with the end of the speech last night and President Obama's repeated calls for a vote on gun control. He kept saying they deserve a vote. He was talking about Gabby Giffords, the kids in Newtown, and so many other local locales around the country. I'm wondering what it was like to be in the hall at that point, because it struck me as the emotional highlight of the speech last night.
Well, there's no question that it was almost a call and response component of his speech, and because I have done a lot of preaching in my life, I can tell you that he had no idea that the response was going to be what it was, and the crowd, mainly Democrats, just erupted in shouts of. We want to vote. We want to vote. And it was emotional because you can look up to the right of where most of us were sitting, and there are the parents of this 15-year-old girl who was killed in a public park. It was a random shooting. But there's no question that was a moment that I don't know if the TV cameras caught it, but there are people in the chamber weeping. And I don't think that the president realized when he wrote the speech, because I have a copy of the speech, that and he did leave the speech form for a couple of sentences, but it was powerful. And I just left Gabby Giffords' husband a few minutes ago before I came to this phone call and for a meeting where he talked about that part of the speech last night. Being powerful and exactly what was needed.
I'm wondering, Congressman, is the president's point that if Congress is allowed to vote on gun control legislation, that the odds of passing are far greater because then there'll be a record of who's for and who's against, and that might boost the prospects for gun control legislation?
Well, there's absolutely no question that if the bill comes to the floor, it's going to pass, and it will not be a narrowly passed piece of legislation. It will be passed overwhelmingly, and the leadership of the House understands that, and that's why they have not brought that to a vote. And the only way it will come to a vote is from the pressure of the American public. And keep in mind that over 90% of the American public is saying that universal background checks are required and necessary at this point in our history. And 74% of NRA members believe that it's important. And so with those kinds of numbers, it's not an accident that Speaker Boehner hasn't brought it to the floor. It will pass. And of course, on the other side of it is that when and there will be some people who vote against it, and when they do, they're putting a target on their backs for the 2016 elections. And I think even NRA members, even people who are conservative Republicans, are not going to like the fact that we can't do universal background checks and possibly stop people with some kind of mental health problem from getting guns.
And, Congressman, is the push right now in Congress, at least from the Democrats, most of the Democrats, to get a vote on a bill that contains a number of provisions in one bill, or do you want votes on separate votes on separate provisions?
Well, I would like for us to have a vote on each provision, and the reason is when you get some kind of omnibus, if you will, it can contain so much that it gives people an extra excuse not to vote for it. Mm-hmm. You know, they could say, well, I was for the universal background check, but I didn't like the limits on the clips. I thought that, well, I don't think we should, do anything with semi-automatic weapons. Many people in this country probably don't understand that there's only one person on planet Earth, only one human being, who can bring this or anything to a vote, and that is the Speaker of the House. Now, mm-hmm. People think that in a city it's a different situation. You know, an ordinance is going to get a hearing. In Congress, there may be 15,000 bills introduced, and 200 of them actually go to committee. So the pressure has to be on Boehner, and the way that the Boehner that process works is that he has to have a great deal of pressure put on his mm-hmm. members, who then will put pressure on him.
We're visiting with Missouri Congressman Emanuel Cleaver about last night's big State of the Union address. And if you have reactions to that speech last night, what was the emotional highlight for you? What did the president say that resonated with you? What did he leave out? 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org. Congressman Cleaver, we've talked so much with you over the years about the partisan divide in Congress. How would you describe the tone and the attitude in this new Congress? Have you noticed any change, any improvement when it comes to Democrats and Republicans working together?
Yes. I think that this last election pushed a few other people, a few more people over to the side of our need for a higher level of civility. The Aspen Institute has asked me to chair a group of members, a bipartisan group, to deal with the issue of civility. And for the first time, I'm having people walk up to me and say, I would like to be a part of this this group. Our first stop will be the National Press Club. And a lot of people want people back home to know that they've had a change of heart. And I'm very upbeat about it. When I say I'm upbeat about it, it doesn't mean that the people at home are going to witness a break in the gridlock. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think that you're going to have a lot more people willing to speak out. In the past, some people have not been willing to say that they are for bipartisanship or that they are for a high level of civility because they can get primaried mm-hmm. because people would say, well, that means you're not going to speak up and speak out on the issues of your constituents and you're a very, very conservative district. And sometimes people interpret that the need to speak out is to speak out in nasty and uncivil tones. But we're still going to have a problem, and we'll see that as we look at whether or not issues are going to be brought to the floor for a vote.
Congressman, just one more quick question here before I let you go. Did he say anything that surprised you last night particularly?
Well, I had a meeting with Valerie Jarrett last Wednesday to get her a preview of the president's speech. She did not mention two things that I was surprised about. One was the $9 an hour minimum wage increase up from $7.25, and then I was a little surprised about that. Because he knew that there was going to be a lot of resistance from Republicans on that. But the other was infrastructure. And when he talked about infrastructure, I'm going to try to make sure that I get messages to him that he needs to stay stuck on infrastructure in our community. If we are able to get a serious transportation bill, something that Republicans have traditionally supported, it means that we have a chance to get significant money that would be put in place for the county executive's light rail program, so it's very important that we get that through. And it has not been something controversial in the past. Everybody has been for it.
Yeah. Well, Congressman, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I sure appreciate it.
Good to talk with you.
You bet. That's Missouri Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. We're talking this morning about the aftermath, the reactions to President Barack Obama's State of the Union address last night. We attempted to get Congressman Kevin Yoder, a Republican from the Kansas side of the state line, on the show today. We did not hear back from him. But other responses from Republicans rolling in during the course of the evening last night. Missouri Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler from the 4th District said the State of the Union is the president's opportunity to outline how he plans to solve the most serious challenges facing our country, but he has again put forward recycled ideas that fail to move our nation forward. Congressman Sam Graves from Northwest Missouri said this after the speech: the president did not outline the path to a strong economic recovery that our nation needs to hear. That was his major concern about the speech last night. Senator Roy Blunt, a Republican from Missouri: I agree with the president when he said we need a smarter, more focused government. But unfortunately, I think he's still talking about a bigger government and a government that can't afford to pay its bills. We're interested in your reactions to the speech last night. 816-235-2888, and our email address is updatedate@kcur.org. Mary from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. The one thing that I was listening for and hoping for and that resonates with me, and I hope that resonates in every community, with regard to our children, and education, and investing in the education of our children, especially early childhood developmental classes, because I believe that is the biggest crisis that we have in this country looking going forward. And if we cannot invest in the children, that is a direct investment into the future of this country.
Hmm.
And I, as a citizen of this country, I have called and I'm writing. I've become more active, you know, with the representatives that represent the state of Missouri, both Republicans and Democrats, because we cannot afford to not invest in the children, and
right.
I think it's a crime for them not to have cut the program that's already been cut.
Mary, thank you for the phone call. And Bob Beatty, a political scientist at Washburn University over in Topeka, how much did he say about education last night, and what's your sense of where the president is on that part of our federal budget these days?
Well, President Obama did mention that he'd like to, you know, work with the states on the issue of providing preschool to, you know, within the states. And, you know, the problem for President Obama is there's only so many things that he can, you know, basically push to fund, because the Republicans control the House. And as we saw in the responses, and you just read the comments from several Republican Congress people, they're very, very concerned about debt and spending.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he's going to sort of increase spending on some things, he has to pick and choose. And, you know, as Congressman Cleaver mentioned, infrastructure is one of President Obama's main priorities. He feels it's very, very important. And, you know, the way the budget situation is, he has to sometimes decide between education and things like infrastructure. And I think I got the sense from that speech that, yeah, education is a lesser priority than some of the other issues.
Hmm. Susie wrote this on KCUR's Facebook page: I'd like to know how many people can afford to live on $9 an hour. I tried to make it on my own on $10 an hour and couldn't afford to keep my place. I don't even have a car payment or a ton of bills and still couldn't survive on it and still eat. And that whole notion, Bob Beatty, of trying to raise the minimum wage, very controversial with Republicans. Hmm. They don't like that idea very much.
Boy, that's for sure. That's why it was a bit of a shock that he threw that in. Someone did tell me, I haven't confirmed this, when he mentioned that, there was over 20,000 tweets per minute about that idea. It's a very popular idea, but it's also one that usually hits at the core philosophy of Republicans, which is government, don't tell business what to do, which is going to make it very difficult to get through. It was difficult for previous presidents as well.
So you're not holding your breath that we'll have a higher minimum wage at the end of this current Congress, then?
No, I'm not. I think it probably won't go, but it also could be something that could be, you know, part of the bargaining for some other issues.
You know, you get a sense, Bob Beatty, that the president of the United States right now is really riding the crest of a wave. He seems to have the upper hand, at least when it comes to public opinion. Republicans sort of still scrambling a bit in the wake of their loss in last year's presidential contest. What about that? How big of a wave do you think the president is riding right now? And how does that bode for him going forward the next couple of years?
Well, there's something to that. It's a small, you know, wave in the sense that his approval ratings and his reelection sort of coincide. It's anywhere, you know, he was reelected with 51% of the vote, which is not insignificant, but his approval ratings tend to be around 50 to 52, 53. And it's going to be a test of his skills, and I think he really isn't wants this challenge to be able to take that 50% and translate it into some legislation. And what he also, I think they're very cognizant of, is the what they used for the election, the emails, mm-hmm. the, you know, social media, the grassroots organizing. I think they do not want to let that go, and that's where we may see that come up if there's a pressure on a vote on gun control, for example, to energize those that grassroots network that he built up during the election and focus it on something like gun control.
Now, how much time does he have to sort of get his agenda through? Because everyone always says the clock is ticking on a second-term president, maybe 18 months, you know, 14 months, something like that. What do you think?
Yeah, that's actually longer than I thought. I really, what happens in, of course, a second term is events can overtake you. So he'd really like to get immigration, for example, done this year, this session. He'd like to get something with gun control done. Then it's in the books. And then when events overtake you, especially foreign policy, at least that's in the books. And that's something that George W. Bush was not able to do because Katrina came. And after that, he really lost a lot of political capital.
And Bob, I've got to ask just really quickly, in our few seconds we have left here, when Florida Senator Marco Rubio gave his response last night, the Twitter universe just filled up with remarks after he reached over and took a sip of water in the middle of his comments. What did you make of that?
It's the curse of the response.
It really is.
You know, Bob, it got hit Bob Dole, it hit Bobby Jindal, it hit Democrats. You know, you do wonder if you really want to accept that job.
You know,
just after the president's up there and looks so regal, the curse of the response.
Bob, always good to have you. Thanks for taking some time.
Sure, good to talk to you.
That's Bob Beatty. He's a political scientist from Washburn University. Tomorrow on the show, with Valentine's romance in the air, are you still worried about your teen dating? Dr. Wes Crenshaw will be here with his rules for teenage dating. Also, we'll have our weekend to-do list. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.